Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Felisa Williams, a faith-based community nurse, and we're in the trenches again, talking about health and wellness. And I trust that you have been healthy and safe and that things are going good for you. Our scripture this evening is coming out of Proverbs, the 14th chapter, the 6th through the 8th verse. A scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not, but knowledge is easy unto him that understandeth. Go from the presence of a foolish man when that proceed not in him the lips of knowledge. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. And so tonight, found an article which I personally thought was very interesting, because it is an article dealing with things that we tell our patients when they're looking up medical information, medical advice. And so this article deals with advice on how to find credible medical websites, studies, and symptom finders. And the reason I thought this was so interesting is that we would have patients come to the clinic, and they would say, well, you know, I Googled this, and according to this, I have all these symptoms, so this is my diagnosis. Or they would come in and said, I Googled this illness that I have, and this is their recommendation, as opposed to what you all are doing. And some of them even look at a little bit of the research, but what I find is they're not reading everything, okay? They're reading enough to, give them the information that they really want to receive. And so this article dealt with that, it's very, very interesting how people find out information on the Internet, not always a credible website, and it ends up being more harm to the person than it actually helps them, because there is so much medical information on the website, but there is a significant amount of health misinformation there. And people just tend to believe anything that supports their own bias, what they typically believe or what they want to do. So we have to be careful with that. And commonly today, more and more of people are turning to the Internet to research their own medical conditions or concerns. And they looked at a survey that was done in 2021, and almost 60% of all Americans go online to get medical questions answered, and 4 in 5 out of them researched the medical recommendation online after a doctor's appointment. This is not to say that when you look at something online that you bring it to your physician and then discuss it with them. And then, of course, your provider would be able to tell you either the pros or the cons, or bring in additional information, which most people don't look at. One of the things that I find is that when they put information on the side effect of medicine, And I believe that you need to be aware of the side effects so that if this happens, you will know how to address it. But I've had a lot of people go online and they look at the side effects that is reported on the medicine, and they don't want to take the medicine, and they want to do an alternative. And in some cases, the medicine is what they need to help with what is going on in their bodies. And what a lot of people don't understand that when you do research, if I don't care if you have one out of 10,000 that reported they had that side effect, it still becomes a side effect. Some of the side effects are significant. Some of them are not. If you read the total research, they usually break down how many people out of that trial actually had those side effects. And some of them, like I said, I've read trials where only one person out of all of those people they tested had that side effect. We have to publish that because we know now that that is a possibility. And so I have no problem with that. And I have, but what I like for people to understand is those the side effects that's printed on the medication is informational, so that you would know what to monitor your own personal experience with. And, you know, like there, you know, there's many benefits to doing personal health research. But then there is a dark side, too, because some people just end up believing everything they read or they become cynical about the health information blasted at them online, that they may begin to generally just distrust the medical profession entirely. And I've had that experience. I've had a patient, and I mean, just would not take certain medicines just because of the information he read online. He'd never taken the medicine. He never experienced it. He didn't know that it would affect him that way. But just because they said, don't take this, you know, he opted not to, but put himself in a more dangerous situation than he should be in. And we feel like the problem could even get worse, especially with the introduction of artificial intelligence type of driven tools. And, you know, we're hearing more and more about artificial intelligence. So when you ask the chat box question, what it does, it pulls information from everywhere online to create a conglomerate of data, news, and opinion, and it's taken both from traditional and unknown sources. And online publishers use this to generate content, including in the health space. We asked, you know, some questions asked. The nation's top epidemiology for the fundamentals of doing their own health research, from how to find, you know, the most credible site to evaluating the best symptoms checkers. And so there were three common scenarios that you may face at some point to help you find information that you need and to do it safely. One of the things is maybe your doctor gave you an alarming diagnosis, okay? So what you're going to do, if you've been told about this particular health condition, your first impulse is to type it into the search engine to see what comes up. And you may get a site that looks official, okay, but this information may not be reputable, because if you notice, and I've seen this, and you go on, you get this information, then you have all these ads popping up, and what that does when you see all this popping up, it just means that an organization has been paid big dollars to show up at the top of the research that's related to what you're looking for. So rather than type in your diagnosis into like a search engine, what they recommend is that you go to some reputable sites to look up your diagnosis. One of the big ones is CDC and Prevention. The National Institute of Health is another one. The American Academy of Family Physicians is another one. Mayo Clinic and CDC is two of the top ones always used. National Institute on Aging, and, of course, your American Geriatric Society. And so those are, you know, those are reputable companies or websites that gives you more information that is valid. Like I said, I usually, if I'm looking at something or if I was providing patient education, I either go to CDC or to the Mayo Clinic. There are times that I would use the Cleveland Clinic. But CDC and Mayo Clinic are usually the top ones that I use. And to these sites include health information where you can search by topic. So you actually go to that particular website and put your specific illness or whatever you're looking for. You put that in, you come up with specific information. You don't have to worry about those ads because a health website that's sponsored by the federal government, a federal government agency, should provide the most updated information. It should be reliable. Usually those sites, NN and .gov, like I said, they suggest that other excellent options are well-known medical schools whose websites in an EDU, as well as a large professional organization. But it is important to not just automatically assume because a website ends in .org that it's legitimate. You really should do your research. .org really usually indicate that it's a nonprofit organization, but it may be an advocacy group that's pushing its own unresearched agenda. And so, and I know this to be, you know, that when you get something from the doctor, you want to look it up. I had to go to my dermatologist today. I knew it was benign, but because the change in the skin, I thought, well, let me just go and get a confirmation. And while I was there, she was telling me I had seen her for another problem a while back, but I did several of the options until it got to injections, and I said, forget it. I'm not doing an injection. I'm not a needle person. So she told me, oh, well, we've got a lot of new things that have come up since you know, came here, because it's been several years, because I didn't really need her. And so I said, well, can you write it down and let me do some research on it? And she said, fine. And then she sat down and explained two of the medications I knew about. It's a compound. Well, I knew about all three of the medications, but I didn't know that they were in a compound. So what I wanted to do is do a little bit more research in terms of them being used as a compound. They're not medicines that I'm not familiar with, but now there's three in a compound, and I never heard of that. So, of course, I went doing my research. But I, like I said, I have my specific websites that I go to. And so they're just the ones that I trust. I tend to get information that's very valid, and I just prefer to go there. The other thing that they found out that people see, like a startling health news story or hear a surprising medical claim. And so if you hear about or see a headline about health discovery that sounds too good to be true, it usually is. You know, we always said if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is too good to be true. The news, which is based on a new study, but there are no links to the study or few or no mention of an author, is often a red flag. So you really have to look at that new updated information. If there's a link to the study, what you want to do is find out who conducted the study. You know, are the authors affiliated with a large research institution like a medical school of a, you know, of a high respected university? And I know sometimes when I see an update and I go to the link, I look to see if it's a familiar, if it's associated with a familiar organization. NIH is a big one that I use. CDC, when I'm coming to research, CDC is good, but NIH is another big one that I use, and again, Mayo, the Mayo Clinic. The other thing, when you're looking at new and updated information, you have to look and see if the evidence can be trusted. When you're doing research, an area that I really love, wouldn't want to go into it, but I just thought it was interesting, because the gold standard for research is that they do a random control trial. And this is where they have a group of people, and they're split up, where one actually does receive the specific treatment while a control group doesn't. And neither group knows whether they're getting the real thing or not. And so that is one of the things you got to look at, is did they do a control group? Did part of the group get the treatment, did the other part not get the treatment? And what was the results between the two? Because sometimes even in the control group, you know, your mind can trigger things that actually aren't happening. So you have to really be good. Now, usually scientists also use good, but it's less reliable or observational studies. They may do a study which to find out that people who meditate regularly are less likely to have a heart attack. But then the results can be skewed because we don't know, and unless they really dwell into that, we may not know. Maybe one person has a healthier lifestyle. So, you know, if they generally have a good life, a really healthy lifestyle, then that may throw your studies off. So you've got to have something at some point that you can measure that's reliable. A third thing they said to look at is who was involved with the study and how many participants that did they have. You know, having 10 or 15, even 50, you know, it's not a good study. Typically a good study involves like hundreds, maybe even thousands of participants. And then when you're looking at that study, you need to notice who these people are and if their cases even apply to what's going on with you. You know, sometimes I've read studies and I'm like, well, you know, I don't have any of these issues, so it doesn't really apply to me. You also have to look at, and this is very good at the peer review. You know, you only trust studies that have been published in medical journals. They typically have a more strict criteria for the information that's included in them. And people can post, anybody can post with a, and then it end up being, you know, the claim is preposterous. It's crazy, you know, and find out that it really doesn't work. And I was trying to think, the lady recently, she's going to jail, can't think of her name right now, with making these claims, only to find out that the claims that she was making was not accurate. And, of course, she is now going to jail for her part in that. So when you're reading a study, your initial step is to look for an abstract. I know you all, but if you look at a study and it says abstract, it's a lot of detailed reading. But they can go into, like, the method they use and at the bottom their conclusion. And it's usually, they usually start with a short introduction that can help you with what that, you know, study is all about. So you really, really have to be careful with these studies because sometimes when I go online to look at what's updated, you're seeing more and more and more of this, and you want your information to be accurate in order to help you. I have nothing against with looking at information online, but you've got to be sure what you're looking at is accurate and it's going to help you. And the thing of it is, if you find something online, discuss it with your doctor. Well, I found this. This is a study that I found. And then if he's a knowledgeable person, he can address what you found online and provide you with accurate information or say, well, that's good, or even take the time to show you, look, yeah, that's good for that particular situation, but you're in a different group, and so that may not work for you. And that's the sad thing about when you're looking at information about your condition online. Everything online, let's say you're diabetic and you're looking up information on diabetes. Even though the disease is the same, the individual is different. And so some things may be applicable to you that's not even in that study. And then there's some things that's in that study that may not even apply to you because of the stage that you're in. Diabetes is one I'm very careful about. Hypertension is another. And chronic kidney disease is another. You really have to be careful and make sure that if you're getting information offline about things like that, because those are critical things, that you're getting accurate information. And this last one is really, I mean, I ran into it all the time. And it's, you have something strange going on in your body. The first thing everybody does, it goes online, and they self-diagnose themselves, okay, which is really a bad mistake. You have symptoms. I have no problems with you looking up your symptoms, but don't self-diagnose. Discuss, once you have your information online, then discuss your symptoms with your provider and let him or her provide you with accurate information, because what they find in a study they did that people that did that symptom decoding tools online, that the information was only accurate about half of the time. If you're having symptoms and you want to check it out, we still recommend that you stick to checking your symptoms as a part of a health or medical center website. Sometimes when I'm doing a workshop, I usually go to Mayo Clinic and plug in symptoms and do my check-in there, or I'll use the CDC because I know these are reputable websites. You really just have to be careful about what you're using. And there are, you know, several good quality for-profit sites that are provide information on symptoms, and they can provide analysis. You just have to be careful, and I would not use once as and say that's accurate. Point is that I was looking up a lab level, and I looked at this level, and different sites gave me different levels of when it was normal, when it was high, or when it was too low. I pretty much knew what the level is when it's normal, and but I was thinking, I can't remember specifically if this is the number, but in the back of my mind, I felt like the number that I got was a little on the high side, and I based that on just basically remembering the numbers, but the person that was experiencing the problem really was symptomatic for that particular lab being abnormal. So you have to be careful, because different sites will give you different information. And when you go to sites and they're providing basically the same information, I would tend to trust that a little bit more than you go to another site and it's way, way off. And sometimes they break that information down. You have to really dig to understand, you know, what exactly they're telling you. So, you know, if you really can't resist searching your symptoms online, don't go straight to the sources at the top of your search results. Since most of these have paid advertisement, and you know, I kept seeing that, and I'm like, wow. And when I read this article, it made sense, because usually at the top is usually your paid advertisements sources. So you need to go further down. You also need to stay away from like forums or review sites or social media, because sometimes this information can be alarming and get you all upset, and typically it's for no reason at all. Again, this article recommends that you go to a nationally known health system or organization you know, to check things out. Also, you know, like if you have a skin, if you have a skin problem, you know, take a picture of it. You know, when I went to my dermatologist, I already had a picture of it. And I told her, I said, now, this is a picture. And she looked at it, and she took my phone, and she made it larger so she could see. And I said, I think I know what it is, but because of the change, I just wanted to be sure. And so, and then after she looked at the picture, and she checked it, she said, it's what you think it is, and it's a benign situation. So that's good to know. Some physicians now do, you know, pictures. If you have something going on, that actually look at it. Some providers, when they are doing like telemed, where they do it by video, they will have you to show them the area that you of concern, and then they go from there and determine if it's something that they can treat without actually having you coming in, or if it is something that possibly you just need to come on in, let us examine it more thoroughly. And so, you know, you really need to be careful when you are reading information regarding the, you know, your health issues. We don't want you to get in trouble, you know, diagnosing yourself with something that really is not what it is. And what it tends to do, it has people getting all upset and worried, and which can lead to another problem, because then they can't sleep and they're worried that something is wrong. You know, so we really have to be careful about what we see when we're reading information. And again, I'm not saying that this information online is not something that's valid or something that will help us, because it will. But take into context that everything you read may not apply to you. It may just apply, you know, some of it may apply to you, some of it may not apply to you, and you may not even be in that category of people. Even though you have that disease, you may not be in that category because of, number one, the stage that you're at, or maybe your health issues are not quite as significant, even with that disease, because even with let's say somebody that has diabetes or high blood pressure, and they keep everything controlled, they keep their they take their medicines, they, you know, have healthy lifestyles, their nutrition is good, you know, and you read this, well, this is going to happen to you and that's going to happen to you. Not necessarily, because you may not, you have to read, does these results occur from people who have uncontrolled illnesses, or does these results refer to people who did have uncontrolled illnesses, but now they're under control, or does this apply to people who have kept their disease process in a good maintenance status? And if you read down further, it tells you a whole lot of information, The thing of it is, people don't tend to move past a certain part that they see. They just assume, oh, this is me, this is me. But we really have to be careful with that and be sure that we're getting the whole picture. My whole take from all of this is use it. It can be a good tool, but also discuss it with your provider. This is what I went online, and I saw this. Can I do this? Does my illness warrant me doing this? What are the downsides to me doing this or taking that? You know, always ask questions. Like you heard me say before, you negotiate with your doctor, but your health care and maintaining a good medical status is a partnership. It is not solely on one person, or it is not more weighted on one person. You both should share equally in that partnership and maintaining your health. So when you go online, I mean, I've gone online and I've asked doctors, you know, what about this? And I can read the research and I'll ask them, you know, what do you think? And they'll tell me their pros and their cons, or they'll say, yeah, that's good. I just read that, you know. And I was just looking today, they're sending out information now about dropping the age. You know, they dropped the age for men to get their PSA check. Now they've dropped the age for women to get a mammogram. So, you know, medicine is an ever-changing field, because as we go in time, we learn things from what we've done in the past. And so things will change. Numbers will change. But just, you know, don't go it alone. Your health care should not be solo. It should be a partnership with your providers. And that's all I have for tonight. No questions or comments. I am finished. You know, but I just thought that was a really good article, because especially with, and the concern now is the artificial intelligence that's coming out. You know, not that some of that is not good, but, you know how people are. Something new comes out and they're on the bandwagon and they take it for gospel, and it may not be, because there's so much fraud, even in putting out information that affects your health.
Yeah, did you just mention AI?
Did I mention what?
Artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
What I see is that they will be in charge soon, and we will be the slaves, and they're going to be the masters. That's my take on AI.
Yeah.
I'm not real.
It started years ago with, I forgot what they called it. I had a book in the 70s on when they were experimenting with this, and they were saying that they had a suit that a salesman could get in, and his wife get in the suit, and they could call each other, and they could have an intimate relationship, and with him being hundreds of miles away. So what they're doing now is they're just solidifying what they started back in the 70s.
Yeah. It's a little scary with how things are going, and that's why, you know, a lot of times so much misinformation can get out. And I've been trying to, I've been following this artificial intelligence, and, you know, it's a little scary. Now, it can be an efficient tool, but as we know, with anything like that, it getting in the hands of the masses of wrong people, it can actually become an issue.
Yeah, because we programmed the computer, and if we put garbage in, we're going to get garbage out. We put even in, put it out. We put control in, we're going to get control out. So that's why I have a problem with AI. And I intend to do a program on it because I see it as a new God.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And I looked at it and I'm like, ooh, little scary. But, you know, when we just think about and I think about it, a lot of people, I guess because I've been around, but when we first started with the computers, it was that big old mainframe.
Mm-hmm.
And now look at where it is now.
Yeah,
you know,
in your telephone.
everywhere.
Oh. Yeah.
So, yeah.
What was that program, Hal? What's his name, Hal?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Long
that was
time
in the
ago.
60s.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think about those old cartoons we used to see, George Jetson, all those things. If you look at, I think back to that, and I'm like, this stuff is happening.
Yeah, it's happening.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah. Okay. Well, you have a good evening.
I'm trying to.
Okay. All right, Matt.